Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Getting It Out Podcast. That was Richmond's Mutually Assured Destruction with Hexer. Hexer is the name of their brand new EP out now digitally on Creator Destructor Records. Pre-orders are available for a 7-inch version right now, so please go to creator-destructorrecords.com and order it there. Or hit the Mutually Assured Destruction Bandcamp. Many places you could pick up the record. I suggest you do it wherever and everywhere that you can. If you're unfamiliar with Mutually Assured Destruction, I'm glad to be the one to introduce you to them. Although I did have their vocalist Ace Stallings on an episode many, many moons ago. I'm going to say it had to be at least 200 episodes ago. a couple years, probably in that pandemic year when I had on a shitload of people. I'm actually sitting very close to the spot that I recorded that conversation, but it is slightly different. The room is entirely different. The house is entirely different. Lots has changed since the last Mutually Assured Destruction appearance on Getting It Out podcast with me, and I'm sure with them as well, though I think only one member has dropped off and they've replaced that with another guy, which is cool. Whatever you got to do to keep things rolling, huh? And rolling is what they're doing. Mutually Assured Destruction just keeps on going. I have their Fever Dream 10-inch on my shelf somewhere, as well as their Ascension LP that was released on Triple B Records. And now we have this Hexer 7-inch on Creator Destruct. That's Edgewood. That's Triple B. That's Creator Destructor. They're not sticking to one record label, and I applaud them for that. Stick and move, as they say. Great track off of Speak 714's The Scum Also Rises, actually. Check it out if you haven't heard it. Dan O'Mahony. Guy who's in many cool bands. I got the God Forgot 7-inch in my jukebox in my garage. I think everybody forgot about that 7-inch, including God. But how about those 411 songs? Anyway, we could go on forever with his bands like John Henry Holiday and, of course, No For an Answer. But this is way off track. This has nothing to do with Dan O'Mahony. Check out Mutually Assured Destruction wherever you can. They're going to be on some tour dates with Drain on the Good Good Tour. That includes stops in Boston, Philadelphia, Jersey City, and Baltimore. Those lineups are fucking stacked, so get to them if you can. You won't be the only one pumped, stoked, excited to see them. Tell them Getting It Out sent you. Speaking of Getting It Out, that's this podcast. And on this episode, I got a conversation with King Yosef. Are you familiar with King Yosef? It's a band, not a person, but it's kind of both. That's the way solo projects work. And if you're unfamiliar, well, they're going to help you get familiar. But first, let's listen to the greatest crossover band from New Jersey that exists right now, Hot Zone.
Kick it! Make family out of friends, make friends out of enemies! Peace to my family, make friends till they bury all the places we've been! We're never sitting it out, we be getting it in! Where you getting it out? I said all the places we've been! We're never sitting it out, we'll be getting it in! Where you getting it out? Get in and out!
If you're listening to this podcast, I assume you at least have your ears and eyes to the underground music world in some capacity and are probably aware that over the weekend there was a bad and sad moment when we lost the great Eddie Leeway, Eddie Sutton, after his long battle with lung cancer. I remember watching like the videos when he was announcing about the way he felt and how he got diagnosed with cancer, but was struck by the resiliency and courage that he looked at it with. He tried many times to launch a podcast, couldn't seem to keep that going, but he did keep Leeway going in one way or another, whether that was Leeway NYC, Leeway on its own, whatever it was officially called. He was still bringing that music to the people that love it. The man was truly a character until the end. He was a passionate and honest guy and didn't hide from his flaws. At least that's the side I saw from him and learned from him when I had my conversation with him a few years ago for an episode of Getting It Out podcast. I posted about it on the socials. It's up there now. It was a Patreon-only episode at this point, but I released it for the public if anybody wants to hear it. Just go to the podcast player of your choice, reverse the sort so the oldest is showing at the first, or scroll all the way down to the bottom. It'll be right there. And it's a long episode, I realized. I didn't notice this, apparently, and I'm not surprised by this at all. I didn't do a whole lot of editing back then. So while there's my usual embarrassing nonsense in the beginning and end of every episode, just like this, there's also Eddie picking up the phone, us saying goodbye, and everything in between. I don't remember editing anything out of that, but I do remember the excitement I had of talking to who I considered to be a legend and someone whose music that I absolutely adore. Born to Expire is among my favorite albums of all time. And I remember the first time that I got to see Leeway, it was at the championship in Lemoyne, Pennsylvania. I'm not sure of the year, maybe mid-2000s. I can imagine the flyer in my head. It was Leeway. It was Brace War. It was Not So Fast. It was Steel Nation. And maybe Forced Forward was the other band on it. And I distinctly remember Eddie's crouch on that stage and his signature croon. I remember seeing him on shows with Scarhead, which was something I only remember when I saw Danny Diablo post about his passing. I remember how cool it was when Terror got him to do guest vocals on Always the Hard Way. He's been such a unique presence on our scene, and now, unfortunately, he's gone. But we have a lot of ways to remember him, not only for his music, but with several appearances on many podcasts, including his own. So if you want more Eddie Leeway, it's going to be out there for you to consume. It's going to take a while to get to the end of it, so please enjoy it. And since you're looking for things to enjoy today, I've got an episode right here that you're already in that you can listen to. This episode features an interview with King Yosef. Yosef and I talked a couple weeks ago, fresh off his tour with Health and Pixel Grip. And the man, the band, the guy is on a roll, having already released two EPs this year and a full length just barely a year ago. That's An Underlying Hum, if you'd like to check that out. His sound, of course, is a combination of metal, hardcore, industrial, electronic, hip hop. There's all sorts of ingredients in what King Yosef does. Born out of a small town in Oregon, it's interesting to see how this thing has grown. And it was a fun conversation. And one thing that he didn't mention, or at least I don't remember him mentioning, that I feel like should be mentioned, so I'll do that now, is that on May 4th, Bleak Fest is going to take place. It's the inaugural event, and it's, of course, presented by Bleak House, King Yosef's record label. There is an 8-band lineup. It takes place at the Ironside Gym again on May 4th. Tickets are $25 pre-sale and $30 at the door. The lineup, who's on it? It doesn't matter. It's a day of no confines, no genre, and no enemies. But here, I'll tell you anyway, from bottom to top, we got VTB, the brutal death metal of Misery Whip, Flesh Produce, more death metal in Bolt Cutter, Reptilian God Mana, the great King Yosef, Help, and the hardcore concoction known as Slime as a headliner. And if that's not enough, there is also a Bleak Fest closing ceremony taking place the same night, May 4th. This one's at the Coffin Club, though, and is 21 plus. Three acts, Insula Iscariot, Trace Amount, and Street Fever. It's a night of body music and movement. So if that feels like your thing and you're in Portland, Oregon, then I know what you need to do May 4th. Mix it in with your Star Wars celebrations, whatever you need to do. Get your Bleak Fest tickets right now. Go to bleakhouse.co/bleakfest and get in on the party. Speaking of parties, let's kick off the party right here, right now on Getting It Out Podcast. I'm going to play you a track from the latest King Yosef EP. This is Mist of Pain, and then our conversation.
Yeah!
There's a lot of ways that I feel like we could start this thing. And there's a really obvious way that almost every interview about music with musicians start. And we're going to do that way. So I want you to tell me, I don't want to say how you got interested in music. I want to know what the catalyst for you getting into the more extreme variety of music, what that was, who that was, what band it was, what was the thing?
Yeah, that's actually sick. I like that more than recounting the whole thing. You know what I mean? I grew up pretty far away from people. So there was a kid that lived next door to me. And by next door, I mean like within a mile.
Right.
And so I went over to his house and he was like, you know, he had like a knockoff SG and listened to Black Sabbath and Maiden and like Judas Priest and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I started listening to like all of that when I was like probably 10. And then I used to ride the bus with these two sisters, and one sister was my grade. And then the other sister was like probably 3 years older than me. It must've been since she was riding our bus. But the older sister was like, you know, battle vest, like leopard print, like, you know, dyed in the hair. And I had like started collecting all my own music, and I'd found some like heavy stuff. You know what I mean? I'd already like gone into my Slayer arc, but I asked the younger sister one day, I was like, can you take my iPod to your house and just download all of Liz's music onto it? And that was back in the day where like, if you committed to somebody else's library, all of your music was deleted.
Mm.
So it was like a big, like, I was like, no, I'm certain.
All in.
And so I got the iPod back. And it was like back in the day when you could still download music without paying for it, and it wasn't illegal. So like you could go on like Pandora and just add things to your library, and anything from your library would go to your iTunes. So between this whole family, there was this catalog of music that was like, I don't know, 40 days worth of music or something like that on my iPod. And there was like the two sides of the coin. I found like, you know, stuff like Devil Driver, which was like pretty scary to me as a 12-year-old. And then I started finding like, you know, I would just go through alphabetically and just like click on things and be like, does this sound cool? And I found one of my favorite bands to this day, but the album I found is the hilarious part, but I found Entombed.
Yeah.
And, but it was right after Serpent Saints had come out.
Yeah.
Which is like the album, you know, it's one of the least loved albums of their whole discography, but I still stand by the opening track on that record is like God tier Entombed. The rest of the album's just not good, but I went from that, and like, you know, there's a bunch of like mallcore stuff on there, Scary Kids Scaring Kids and all that stuff. But there was also like, you know, really early Whitechapel and like Vader, and like, you know, it was just like every type of extreme music in my iPod, and I just was like discovering all the time.
But so is this like the 2000s?
Yeah, late 2000s. I think
2000s.
Probably 2008, 2009.
Give or take. Is that around the time? And maybe, I don't know, maybe it doesn't happen for a while, because you mentioned you live like kind of middle of nowhere is what I'm gathering from it. When do you find yourself like going to shows? Is there a scene? Is there anything? Like, how does that all come together?
Yeah, it's really funny. So there was like a scene where I grew up, but the difference for like me, you know, I used to, the internet was my scene, and also in person was my scene. But unlike a lot of places, you know, I hear about like just even East Coast people and like growing up getting into heavy music and hearing about like the divides between people, like that wasn't really a thing for me, because there was no like, you know, old head that was like at the show to tell me what is not cool and what is cool. So I just liked everything.
That's good. That's a good way to do it.
Yeah. So, I was playing guitar. I like tried to start a couple bands with friends my age. And of course, all we did was like cover For Whom the Bell Tolls like 100 times, and then like never did anything. And then, we went to a talent show at the high school, and I was in 8th grade, and these two kids played an original song at the talent show. And they were all like, one of them was like thrash metal out, and the other one was like emo kitted out, but they were both really good.
Yeah.
And so I went home and added them on Facebook and was like, hey, if you ever need another guitar player. And they were like seniors when I was like 14. And they hit me back and were like, send us a video of you playing guitar. Like, we'll see if you're good. Play it. And then they asked me to join. And all of a sudden, you know, I was like, oh my God, there's local bands, you know, there's local music going on. And yeah, I started going to local shows a lot, but it was kind of the classic where like we used to have a very legendary venue called the Trove, and it was a costume store, but in the back they built a stage and it was probably 75 cap.
Right.
And so like when all these like deathcore and hardcore bands would play, it would just explode. It was like the craziest thing. I got to go to two shows there before it was completely shut down forever. And then like that over and over again, we would get a venue, you know, somebody's nose gets broken from a spin kick and then like venue shut down.
Kind of the classic story. Yeah. The venues never last. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
Well, a couple of things strike me there in your retelling of all that. One of the things that I right away picked up on is that you've really pursued this music in a way that most people I don't think are one confident enough to do. And the fact, like you say, you just handed your iPod and said, I want you to give me all of this. You seek out these people that you don't even know. You ask them, do you need a guitar player for your band? Where does that come from with you? Because now you're like basically doing something that's, do we call it a solo act? I don't know. What's your...
Yeah. So it's me with a live band, you know what
right.
I mean?
Is that, I don't know. I feel like those steps, you're taking those steps real early on, that confidence to put yourself out there.
Yeah. I think what's funny too, is I'm getting older, I'm definitely more confident, a lot more sure of myself. It's like you become, as you like learn yourself, but like as a youngster, like super shy, super self-conscious. Like it's funny because those are probably the only, you know, it's the only zone of my life where I was like that.
Right.
And I think it's less to do with confidence and more to do with just like pure obsession, frankly. Like I'm not a person who can like half focus on anything. I'm either like 100% into something or I just am not going to attempt or try. So it's like, you know, asking those kids is, it was like, well, they're the only kids who are playing music and I want to play music. So like,
right.
I don't want to be in a band with my friend who like has a drum set and is yelling at his grandma so he can practice. You know what I mean? Like these kids already are practicing somehow. So I should join that. And then I think it's also like less the confidence and more just like, I've always felt like, you know, I like being a sponge. So it's like, I want to learn things. If you know more about something that I like, then like, it's not a threat to me. It's just like, well, you should tell me, like, you know what I mean? Like I want to be around people who know more than me. And I think by proxy, that has like brought me to a lot of really interesting places really rapidly. Cause I'm constantly just like, oh, well, I don't know how to do this thing, you know, and approaching things with like the humility to admit that you don't know, I think is like one of the things I learned pretty early on, that other people are, like, there's obviously fake it till you make it stuff too. But there is something to be said about just being honest and just like, I don't fucking know, but I would love to know. Can you tell me? You know what I mean?
And like humility. Yeah.
A lot of people respect it and will give you a huge open door if you like can admit that they know more than you and you just want to learn, you know? So
do you know who Charlemagne the God is?
I do.
All right. So I barely know anything about the guy, right? But I listened to him do one interview. I think it was like a sports podcast with Bill Simmons, who I love. And he did an interview there and he said one thing that kind of always stuck with, in that he said the phrase, I'm too stupid to be closed-minded. And I was like, yeah,
real.
I get it. Yeah. That's like, if I just rely on my own stupidity, I'm not going to get anywhere. So I got to open my circle, my mind to the people around me who can help me. And, you know, that's reminds me of what you're saying now.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's just like, I think also too, is it's like, as I get older, my priorities rearrange and like, you know, you look through the through line of your life. I think for me, it's like, I've always kind of, you know, not great knowledge or like divine secrets of the universe or whatever, but I feel like I've always been on a quest for knowledge and learning, and whether it be, you know, music or academic, obviously is very different, but I feel like that's the thing to me. Like when I look at people that are older than me that I respect, is like, people who stay aware, not because they're like, I want to be hip or anything like that, but just simply because they have a genuine interest in something and are constantly gaining knowledge about a new thing.
Right.
That and endless like, pursuit. I admire that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's cool. That sounds like you're, I mean, some people would say maybe something like you're wise beyond your years in that respect. Whether or not that's true, I don't know, but the fact that that you're pursuing that, you know, it's smart.
Yeah, absolutely.
I certainly didn't come to those type of conclusions until I was much too old. I always talk about how much of an idiot I was until I had a kid, which was 30. And before that, I was just a fucking moron. Like up and down all the ways, you know, and I don't know how I would have gotten by like that. But anyway, we all come to it at a different point. And some people, unfortunately, don't at all. But you know.
Yeah, I've also learned that.
Yeah, you can't wait or you can't hang with them. Nope. All right. So let's fast forward like way ahead to King Yosef. When does it start? Why do you start it? Where's it come from?
Yeah, so obviously, like I was playing in bands a lot as a young teenager, and I moved to Minnesota at one point in time to live with my mother, and she had taken in, you know, he's my older brother now, but my older brother, and he was trying to rap at the time, and so I downloaded a DAW just like to learn how to record guitar because I was like, oh, I moved away from all my friends, I have to. If I want to do anything, I got to do it on my own. And he saw me with the DAW one day and was like, you should learn how to make beats because then I can get beats. And I was just like, yeah, sure, man. Like, fuck it. I'll try. You know what I mean? Like, seems cool to me. Yosef or, you know, pre even King Yosef, just Yosef was just me making beats and doing production work. And, I was still in bands at this whole time frame, you know, kind of running parallel. It was like two sides of my brain where I kind of got to, you know, like one would nourish the other. So it's like being in a band is, you know, being in a relationship with 3 to 4 other people all the time. And everything's a fucking group decision. And like everything takes forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're always waiting on someone. So like when I'm making beats, I can just make a whole song by myself and like get the gratification of writing. And then my band dissolved when I was like 18, I want to say. And at this time, like my production had already started getting heavier, the less my band would do. Mm-hmm. Like it was like subconscious. Like I just was like, oh, more distortion, more distortion, more distortion until, you know, all of a sudden I was kind of like at this place where I was like, well, everything I wanted to do with my band, I'm basically already doing as a solo act. So I just was like, I'm just going to keep going and not have to worry about the logistical, like, oh, well, like, you know, the drummer needs to like not have lunch with his girlfriend on this day so we can get together for practice. Like,
right.
I was just really over that because I was so, you know, I just back to being obsessive. Like,
yeah,
to me, it's just like, if I want to write music, I'm just going to write music. And like, it's that simple. There's nothing that's going to oppose me in that other than writer's block. So, I kind of just developed from that, like being in bands. And then all of a sudden all that aspect of it was gone for me. And I was like, oh, well, all of a sudden this is heavier. And then it just kept going.
Do you remember like getting any certain feedback or input from anybody else where you kind of realized, oh, this is good. Like what I'm doing is good. And is this, I can continue at this.
I mean, there were a lot of like people who were really early supporters, but I think at the time I wasn't an avid believer in like the early things of it. You know, like the first things I ever released as King Yosef are very like, I'm just sitting in front of a computer with a microphone and I'm just like, fuck it. You know what I mean? And, but I think it was just the fact that like it kept evolving, you know, because it was like, oh, this is fun. Was more the idea than like, this is a super serious project that I'm going to take really far. And then I kind of hit this blockade where I was like, I don't feel like I'm getting anything from this emotionally anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because I'm not being serious about it and I'm not actually saying anything that matters to me. And so like, you know, over the last 4 years, I think this has been a project for 6 years now. And those first 2 years, the way it sounds is like very much like adolescent, young. I'm 18, 19, 20, you know, and then took a hiatus for a couple of years and then came back with a completely different sound. And I think that the point I'm trying to get to is that like the affirmation of people that were there when I started, you know what I mean? There's people who are younger than me that were like, you know, I was 15 listening to your music and will be like, I feel like I grew up with you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because like it kept evolving at the same time. Like I'm not a child anymore. Neither are they.
Yeah.
So they understand where I'm coming from. And I think those were like the moments of like, oh, this is like, you know, this is kind of crazy that like anybody's listening to this at all, because it's like, you know, the whole thing is so insular for me. Like where we are right now is where I write everything. Like, and I don't have like, there aren't songwriters with me. There's not like other bandmates. Like I'll bounce stuff off of my live members just for, to see what they think about concert vision of it. But like, otherwise it's me in here. So it's like having any sort of feedback that people like listen is always been insane to me. But I would say probably like 2020, 2021 is when I was like, oh, people are like, you know, it's like when people give you compliments and you think they're just blowing smoke up your ass.
Sure. You just think it'd be nice to you. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, that's awesome that you're giving me like a sympathy. It's good, bro. You know what I mean? And now it's like progressed. I'm like, oh, you guys actually think this is good. This is crazy. So yeah.
That's great though. And you know, and I've heard similar stuff, like almost exactly like you're talking about from a guy. Well, he goes as Ghost now.
Yeah.
I knew him a couple of years before he started doing that. Barely though. He put out my band. I had a hardcore band when I lived in Baltimore, and he put out the demo tape for that when he was living in Texas. That's the only way we knew each other, was that he released this tape. Right. So then like years later, I like see this thing in Decibel. Like I see a little write up for him. Like, is this the motherfucker? You know, and I had to like look and but that was like the early stuff where it doesn't sound like it sounds now. Right. And it's similar to what you're saying, where it was, you can hear the sound in there, but it's different. But what was interesting to me talking to him and similarly with you is that, at least in my opinion, my perspective, that there wasn't really a genre confines. There wasn't something that pre-existed where it's supposed to sound like this. And people like yourselves kind of, and though you're not the same things, kind of got to build your own sounds because there wasn't anything to box you in.
Yeah, I think also too, is it's like, you know, like you played in hardcore. I played in hardcore. I played in, you know, I have like a death metal band that I play in still to this day. And it's like, there is a community for that.
Right.
You know what I mean? That used to be underground culture. It is not anymore. That is like, it's like a degree away from mainstream culture. So like, you know, I started that death metal band with my friends like probably 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And like the drop of a hat, man. You know, shows all the time, like people are listening when it comes out, and it's because it's like there's a built-in structure.
Yeah
So I think like, because like coming back to the main question, is it's just like, because there's not a structure of like affirmation like that, you know, like death metal people look for death metal,
right?
And they find death metal and they support death metal that they like. Same with hardcore, is it's like, because I don't have like a genre home, it's like, to me, it's like, oh, these random people are telling me that it's good. But like, on what basis? You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, oh, this is really good compared to the Trapped Under Ice album, man. Yeah. Like, you know, like there's no, you know, there's no forefathers. That way
it kind of makes it, you know, you might consider it more genuine then, when it's just, I like this. And I can't tell you why. I can't tell you what about it I do, but I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. We always make jokes about like me and the live bandmates about how my music's like a Rorschach test. So it's like whatever of my influences in the music you like, those are the ones you're going to tell me about.
Right.
Or like whatever genre is your jump off point, you're going to tell me the one that from that genre.
Yeah.
So like,
that makes sense.
You know, like people that have heard Hatebreed and like Nine Inch Nails will be like, oh, it's like, you know, those two things mixed together. And then some people will be like, it's like Death Grips. You know what I mean? It's like, because you can tell they're coming from a hip hop angle, or like, you know, it's very interesting.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Do you, since you brought it up, and I know the whole what was inspired was, is a tired question, but was there a sound you think you were initially going for? Does King Yosef sound the way now that you thought it would?
I'm like getting, I would say I'm still like hunting that.
Yeah.
Like I'm as close as I've ever been, you know, and I think once I achieve it, I don't know if, how stoked I'll even be.
Got to change it. Got to move the goalposts.
It's, yeah. All I knew though, when I started was I loved clanky sounds. You know what I mean? I loved like the metal clanking textures, like noisy stuff. And I liked it dark and I liked it very bass heavy. So it's like those elements have always stayed. It's just like the production changes and my ideas change, you know, because I go about everything in like a roundabout way all the time.
Sure. Sure. That makes sense though. I mean, especially like we said, when you're establishing your own type of thing, it's
yeah.
And I don't know, does that, so early on then, was your bar for what you would consider success low? Like what were your expectations when you start doing this? A couple people liking it's good. Is that the,
yeah. I mean, honestly, it was just like, you know, I was just posting on the internet, like King, like I had been making music under King Yosef since like, I guess I have to say it's been 8 years of this project. So the first 4 years are just like, to me, nonsense. Like I'm just doing whatever the fuck I wanted, but like not where it's under an umbrella.
Right.
And so, you know, I was just releasing music. Like that was my only goal, was to do something that felt fun to me or like gratifying to me. And if people found it along the way, then cool. And you know, as things have evolved and changed, like my goals have changed, but
right.
At the time, it was just like, will anybody listen to it?
You know what I mean? That seems like essential growth period stuff, though. You know, you got to go through all that. You got to fuck around and find out what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. Is the we talk about how you kind of sit between all over, under, over top, whatever, all sorts of subgenres in underground extreme music. Has that been, would you consider it that it's been more of a blessing or a curse?
I go back and forth every day, man. Yeah, no, I mean, I think the thing is it's like, you know, my dad used to always tell me, not even related to music, but just like, I was a school fuck up, you know what I mean? But he used to always just be like, you know, you don't have to be the best. You just have to be different. You know what I mean? Like your success just has to be different than other people's success. You do not have to be the best in anything.
Right.
You know, same as like, you don't have to outrun the bear, you know, you just got to outrun the guy next.
The slowest person. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, it has its ups and downs. Like, you know, obviously touring has picked up a lot in the last like 2 years for me. And like a lot of people are giving it a shot now, but I think for a while there, it was just like, what the fuck does he tour with? You know what I mean? Like, it's not like same thing. Like what I was saying with like the death metal and hardcore thing, like my death metal band goes out, there are death metal fans in each city that like death metal when they go on a tour and they find them. And right. It's like really easy. They tour with other bands that sound like them, you know? So for me, it's been like a little bit more abstract to like even just get out in the world and like figure out who my contemporaries even are to like, you know, who are my buddies? Like who am I going to tour with? Like who's the gang I have of people. And, but I think also to its own is it's like, getting out is harder, but once I get out, it works better that I'm different, you know, because it's like, It's just simply like people come up to me and are like, I've never heard anything like that.
Right, right.
And it's like, I would rather be divisive than be like mediocre.
You know? Sure, for sure. Yeah.
I would rather people be like, not for me, man. You know, like, cool.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing worse than being forgettable, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You and I both, I'm sure, have seen plenty of death metal, hardcore, whatever bands that we don't remember at all.
Yep.
You know, and yep. I've seen some fucking weird stuff too that maybe I didn't like it, but I do remember it.
You think about it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned touring. You just did a tour with Health and Pixel Grip. Is that the type of tour that seems to go best for you? Or are you still trying to figure that out?
I mean, I will say that one did go the best, but I don't know for the future if it is, but I think like I get put in the goth space a lot.
Right.
You know, even though it's like really the only thing I have in common is like drum machines. It's not like my music's not far on the floor, like dancey right. stuff all the time. So I think it's kind of, it reminds me similarly like of what happened in the early 2010s with like a lot of that Death Wish and like Sergeant House stuff, mm-hmm. where like Chelsea Wolf and like Death Heaven would tour together.
Right.
And like, that doesn't make any sense actually. Yeah. But like, for some reason, everybody was like, oh, it's just dark. Like,
it has quiet parts.
That's yeah, exactly. Like it's scary. So like, we'll just put them together, you know?
Right.
And so I think that's kind of like what's been happening for me with like the goth wheelhouse stuff, which I enjoy. But with this tour, I learned a lot too, that like, it was just like a lot of those kids don't know what they want yet, you know? Or like some kids would come up to me and be like, this is my first concert ever. You're the first band I ever saw, you know, like, and giving them the space to like, you know, cause it's fun to dance, but like, if you want to mosh and you've never moshed before and you don't really know what it's about, you know what I mean? Giving that space to people was like, so sick. Like having kids like participate and like watching people in the crowd while I'm performing, like, you know, these people had never participated in anything like that before. Like it clicked for them, and then see it like turn to a new page. Like I was like, oh, I'm a bridge right now for a lot of people. And so I think with Health's crowd and Pixel Grip's crowd, it worked really well. Like it was super fun, and Health and Pixel Grip were super easy to tour with, which is like, you know, touring's not easy in the first place.
Right.
So if you can find cool people to tour with, it's, you know, dime a dozen. It's awesome. So
when you're on the road, how many people does King Yosef tour with? How many, what's your band? What's your makeup? Is there a merch guy or whatever? You know, how many?
Yeah.
What's your crew?
So it's like all on the family. It's like, you know, it is my best friend Cameron. He plays guitar and does the synth stuff. Got a new drummer named Cameron as well, but we call him BK because he plays drums and Bolt Cutter. So Bolt Cutter Cam.
There you go.
One of my good friends, Harper, she's our TM and merch and photographer. And then we just recently for this tour added my good friend Ed, who I knew from some people, but as our front of house guy. And so we're running like five deep, and it's in a Ford Transit, you know what I mean, with six seats in it, and we have no trailer. So
so it's tight.
Yeah, you get to know each other real quick, you know. But yeah, it's pretty easy in the regards of like everybody in my crew is like really on the ball. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, I can't say enough about how much everybody else shows up for what they're supposed to do. Like it's phenomenal. It's, you know, because obviously it's like these are my friends helping me bring my songs to life.
Yeah.
So it's like there's a lot of room for them not to give a shit, frankly. You know what I mean?
And, sure. Yeah.
You know,
think
like
if it is just a job, yeah, they could just be doing it for, you know, what do you want done? Fine, we'll do it.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas like, you know, they show up and play fucking hard and like pack out gear and, you know, I mean, carry stuff, do the drives, and like we all get tired and, you know, burnt out, but nobody's like, fuck this, you know?
So. Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully it never happens either. But you know what? That's also though, not that I wanted that to happen, but it's also the benefit of being the solo act is that as long as you're there, it is exactly what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, technically. Yeah. I was just looking at, so I have a list that I keep of like shows we've done. Uh-huh. It was just like just the last year and a half is like 70 shows.
Wow.
When I was like, yeah, no wonder we're all burnt out and fried right now, man. Like, you know, but I would say for 70 shows, obviously we've had our qualms or whatever, but it's never deep. It's always like sibling stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like your brother or your sister is just annoying you, or you're annoying your brother or sister.
Right. Sometimes you got to sock them, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You got to tell them to shut the fuck up and move on.
Well, earlier this year, you released a 2-song EP, Mr. Pain and Dredge, with the 2 tracks on that. And interesting pair of songs because they don't sound much like each other. Also interesting, and I have the stuff wrong, but you worked with Kurt Ballou and Steve Evitz, two very highly regarded producers. Like,
yeah.
Was that designed to be like that? Like two different songs, two different producers?
I worked with both of them on the last full length.
Okay.
And, you know, Kurt is like, for lack of a better term, like he's on my Rushmore of like production.
Right.
The first legal tattoo I ever got was a Converge tattoo.
Nice.
So, yeah. I think.
Was it the Jane Doe face?
No,
good. Good. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. I got an All We Love, We Leave Behind tattoo.
That's fine.
Which I feel like that's kind of a deep cut, even though I think that's like, that's probably like their second best album. People sleep on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's riffs on there, man. So I'd worked with Steve and Kurt on the last record. The last record was like a really huge undertaking. You know, it took me like 3 years to write it. Lyrically, I was like, I got to dive in. I got to, you know, I don't want to say make it hurt, but like, I got to like go to places where this means something to me, where there's risk.
Right.
And so when it came to time to do vocals, I went to Steve Evitz because I was talking to a couple friends that are like, you know, in bigger bands or have done more recording than me. And I was like, you know, I need somebody who I can trust to like treat this not with delicacy, but like with respect. Mm-hmm. So like, to push me to a new place. And both of them did that on the album. So when it came time to do the new songs, I was like, well, you know, they went from like being like people I admire and like would love to work with to like being my colleagues.
Yeah.
So for me, I was just like, it makes sense that like I could say anything to them now to get like further into the weeds and like make this more my vision than ever before. And we, like I just toured with Converge right before going to the studio for these. I already had the time scheduled to go out to Salem to record with Kurt. And then they asked us to go out for a week. So I just hung out with them for like a week straight. And then I was like, okay, well, like, you know what I mean? This is now my friend.
Yeah.
So coming back to the studio, there was like less intimidation because the first time I went, obviously I was like, it's the fucking guy. Like I'm in the studio where he recorded all of the albums I love, you know what I mean? And you know, when I came away from that experience, there was a lot of times where I was like struggling with the recording process and Kurt would just be like, what's your vision? You know, like, don't think about what anybody else is thinking about right now. The only thing that matters is what you want to do, you know? So I'm just here to help you communicate that. So coming back to the studio, I was like, easy. Like I know exactly like what I have to tell Kurt, even just from the knowledge that him and Steve gave me, it was just like, you know, made perfect sense. It was very funny though, like tracking, you know, cause both the EPs are like, you know, strategically hard and soft
right.
or hard and softer and being like, okay, we're going to do this one that has blast beats all over the place. I'm going to record like feedback for 2 hours in your studio and then be like, now I need like a guitar tone that sounds like just like heaven.
You know, change it all. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's fun. Keeps them on their toes.
That's right. Yeah. That's good. That's good. Especially, and I'm sure they like it that way too. You know, I think we know the type of bands that are all trying to get in with Kurt, especially, and tend to have a similar sound. It's all, you know, metallic, hardcore,
yeah, which metal. Is
like, you know, which is whatever. Yeah. That's great. And you and I both love that stuff, but I'm sure it's nice for them when something new comes along.
Yeah. I definitely like going. One of my favorite things about Kurt is like, I know what musically his strengths are for me. Mm-hmm. And then watching him like, be like, what's this? You know, as something I did is like one of my favorite things. And then him trying to like, you know, there's an unreleased song that's not out yet. It's a collaborative track with another band. And I wrote the other half of it with Kurt in the studio. And he was like, that guitar synth, that synth guitar, you know, he was like, I think you should drop it an octave. Maybe like, he was like, he started understanding the pieces of how I'm writing what I'm writing.
Yeah.
But was giving me the Kurt, like traditional, you know, traditional band ideas about it. And I was like, this is sick. Like, we're getting to a place where you understand what my vision is fully.
Right. Like that progress, but the between the cooperation. Yeah. The way it's all coming together. Yeah, I like that. That's cool. That's a good thing to acknowledge too. To recognize, I say. I mean, it's a good thing to be able to recognize that and see that it's happening. The EPs that you're talking about that you put out, it came pretty quickly after the last album, but you said you worked on the last album for 3 years. So that kind of makes it make a little more sense. It's not like he just put out this record and then immediately started working on something else. I understand.
There was overlap.
Yeah, but there's got to be some type of overlap, right?
No, so that's what's insane. So there's an EP before the album. That's the most insane overlap when I describe that to people. So there's the EP, The Ever-Growing Wound, that came out before the last album. Mm-hmm. And I finished the album fully mixed and mastered, listened to it and was like, fuck yeah, nobody's going to understand where I'm coming from. So I wrote the EP, like The Ever-Growing Wound, after I finished the album and was like, I need like a prequel to the record. That's to like sonically link these spaces together, because it's been long enough that people are not going to understand where I'm coming from. And then once the album was out, I'd done the whole, you know, here's every music video, here's all the merch, here's all the pre-orders, and like just like blood, sweat, and tears for like 9 months into it. It was like around May. I think I just checked the file on Cut the Cord, but I think I started working on that like end of May.
And the album came out on Underlying came out in April, right?
Yeah. So, and I remember consciously thinking to myself, like, I'd not written new music that wasn't tethered to the record. Cause like writing the EP after, it was like, I'm writing it in the space of like, I needed to like lead to this. And so all of a sudden I had this spurt like right after the album came out where I was like, I'm free. Like, there's no obligation to anything right now. Like, I don't have to put this on an album. It doesn't need to like sonically make sense. It doesn't need to like link lyrically. Like, I was just like, I can do whatever I want. And so these four songs that have come out, like, I think they're all written within like a 2 to 3 month time frame of each other. Like, I was basically writing a song or two a month, which is like, you know, pretty decent rate for me. But yeah, so now I have to work on album two, but these did come out. These did happen directly after the album, which is like,
gotcha. All right. Yeah. See, I thought with the timeline, there would have been something else going on, but no, that's interesting. What do people think of the heavier versus softer songs? Like, how's that going over? Are you hearing a preference for one or the other?
I think it's funny as I feel it more in a live circumstance, you know, like Cut the Cord is like, when I wrote that song before, I normally have to go record a song and then I bring it back and set it up to play it live.
Yeah.
Cause obviously I can't just be like, play the riff.
Right.
Too many electronics and stuff. But Cut the Cord was like, we brought that out on the Converge tour, which means I'd finished it a month before and hadn't even gone and recorded it or anything. Like, was not finished. And I was like, I have to get this in front of people, cause I understand like this will be a good live song. So like the heavy ass beaters are always like fun live,
right?
Because it's like the quickest way to make people be like, oh, it's like a breakdown, you know. But like playing Shame's Mirror live, that song and the way it builds and like grows, I think people understand it more in a live context. Like, it's fun on record, but like, especially with like Spotify and stuff, people are looking for the thing that gets really loud and really crazy in 3 seconds. They don't want to pay a minute and 30 seconds, you know, of time to like get to the thing. So I feel like the live circumstances where I get to like, you know, kind of have everybody hostage and I'm like, now you're going to listen to the slow one and see how sick this is. And it you know, people come up to me and ask me, what was the slow song you played? You know, a lot more than they'll ask me, like, what was the heavy one? You know?
Right. Right. It stands out more. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. I like that. And that's an interesting way to think about it. Cause I often, I've been so much in my head, the way I listen to music, my preferences, that I forget that this is the 40-year-old preference. You know, like, it's not necessarily the kid who cares who's going to actually buy the merch and go to the shows.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, oh, I want long, slow albums. Like, that's what I want to listen to. I either want quick, fast, hardcore EPs, punk, whatever. I want them in EPs, or I want long, slow records, full lengths. And I got to like realize that is not the way.
Dude, I was just having a whole conversation in my head about this earlier, because I always see these things that are like, the new generation doesn't listen to albums, so we should just quit making albums. And I'm like, okay, like, because people watch TikToks, we should quit making movies. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, I just refuse to do that. So it's just like, when it comes to releasing music, for me at least, is it's just like, I'm going to present it in the best way I possibly can, mm-hmm. with like, you know, the branding, the imagery, like, you know, like all the art for those singles, like, are done myself too. Like, I want everything to have a vision to it, but it's like, if you're not going to take the time, I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, respectfully, like, I think the song's good. Like, if I didn't think it was good, I wouldn't have put it out. So it's like, but the people that do take the time, you know what I mean? I feel like they're going to get it. And it like inherently just weeds out people. You know what I mean? Like, I always call it like the four quarters versus 100 pennies analogy is like one of my favorite analogies, but it's like, I would rather four quarters listen to the slow song and they show up to every single show, you know what I mean? And have a good time and are fun and like genuinely enjoy participating in it in like any circumstance versus the 100 pennies. Like, you see those TikTok videos where the artist is performing and the chorus ends and the crowd goes dead silent because I don't know any of the words. You know, like, that's terrifying to me.
I haven't seen that, but I do like the, it's quality over quantity. That's
exactly
simply what it comes down to. Yeah.
Yeah. Classic.
Yeah. All right. So I want to ask you though about the handful of European tour dates you have lined, including A Stop at Roadburn. I'm sure there's other shit on there that's probably notable. I just don't know it off the top of my head.
There's a lot of artists. So.
No. I just mean there's probably other notable places you're playing, dates you know. Do you find a different appreciation for your music across the Atlantic?
I think the thing is like I haven't like gotten there yet. So it's like the people that do support me over there are like really dedicated to it, which is fucking awesome. There's not a lot of them, but the people that are there are like
quantity over quality.
Yeah, they're the people that will buy a shirt and pay for shipping to France. You know what I mean? Which is insane.
And that ain't cheap. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, this is kind of my first, you know, soiree into it, because I've played Australia like two times now. Mm-hmm. And the hilarious part is every time I do, you know, it's like good. I have a good time. The crowds are nice and whatnot, or get crazy. But all of the Australian people will come up to me and be like, you have to go to Europe.
Yeah.
They're going to get you.
That's why I ask. I feel like Europe. For my wife's from Italy, and this is not my only like inside intel here, but you know, we just know from talking to her for our whole lives, and she went to a boarding school in Germany, and just like the way that Europeans love electronic music. Well, first of all, they seem to like music more than us, no matter what, but specifically electronic music. So that's why I think they're probably gonna like you.
Yeah, that's what everybody says too, is it's just like, I think, you know, America's like electronic music is like not like, we have a lot of amazing origins here. You know what I mean? Like with house music in Detroit and like, you know, but like, it's not like how jungle and like drum and bass, those are from like a city in the UK. You know what I mean? That's from like a square block radius where you can find every single person that like invented that. And like, you know, techno in Germany and like those sorts of things, it's like, that's from there. That's like something they like love and appreciate because it's from there. Right. So it's like, they get it just well, I feel like on principle because they had it longer. You know what I mean?
Or yeah, like more familiar.
Yeah, exactly. Or it's like a lot of those things are born out of like culturally different things. You know what I mean? Like our big electronic music is like bro step. You know what I mean? Like, which is like, what is that born out of other than to like want to be crazy and party, which right. is like cool. You know what I mean? But it's like Kraftwerk coming out and it's like post, you know, the wall coming down in Berlin. And like, you know what I mean? Those are very different origins of like what those things mean. So I feel like within it, it means a lot of different things to people over there.
Right.
But also, yeah, France is like financing like death metal festivals and stuff. Like I can't even imagine that in America.
No, it's so funny. It's always funny to me every year seeing the big lineups and at Hellfest.
Yeah.
And then, but then also having attended the last American Hellfest where, you know, like being there yep. and the, where at the Rexplex in New Jersey, like being in the room when Bad Luck 13 is like, this is the United States never would have paid for this.
Yeah.
I mean? Like they wouldn't have.
Exactly. It's like, yeah.
It's nonsense. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's psychotic to me, you know, just even talking to my European friends and then being like, oh, you know, if your show doesn't sell out, like random people will just show up like they not even like they won't even know what's going on. They simply will just be like, oh, there's music. I have to go, you know, like and they're like, it's really common, super normal to just like be like, oh, there's a band playing, even if it's like something I would never listen to. I'm going to go because somebody's performing like. And I'm like, what?
A cool way to be. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Must yeah. I cannot nice. Imagine that here. But yeah. So all that to say, like, I don't know what the perception will be, but, you know, I feel like Roadburn's going to be like a good showcase for that. Like, mm-hmm. I feel also like really primed for it right now after coming off of like the 5 weeks with health.
Yeah.
It's like, feels like the perfect alley to just be like, all right, Europe, like, you know, here's my first couple shows here ever, but like at Roadburn, we're definitely
you're
coming
in good
out
shape.
Swinging.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's yeah, not 6 months right off.
Yeah.
You know,
that's cool. That's cool. All right. So, anything else ahead in the year that you can announce? If it's nothing, say nothing, whatever, but you're going to Europe, then what for King Yosef?
Yeah. I'm going to Europe and then I'm going to try to take a little time off from touring to write new music.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm really bad at resting. You know, I've been home from tour since the 6th and I leave in 5 days for Europe. So I'm not good at just like sitting still. I have to practically be doing something. So, but album 2 is like slowly underway. So I would say that's probably where my main focus is going, other than like the label that I run with my friends called Bleak House.
Yeah.
That's obviously taking up like quite a bit of time. We're doing like a festival and we got a couple of releases coming out this year. And, you know, we just did our first vinyl press. That's not a King Yosef album. So just like really gearing towards that and making sure I can focus my energy on helping my friends as well with their records. And
that's cool. I was listening to some stuff on the Bleak House page the other day. Those Misery Whip songs. What's the split? What's the Misery Whip split?
Oh, with Blood Tithe.
Blood Tithe. Yeah, that was a good release there. But yeah, I love digging into labels. So I was unaware of it until recently, and
hell yeah,
started checking out that stuff. So it's very cool you're doing.
Yeah, that. We try to do no genre, just a bunch of weirdos. Like we try to make the label itself as the genre, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's like anything that doesn't fit necessarily anywhere, it's like, you know, it can still all fit under one umbrella. That's kind of the idea.
Yeah.
So there you have it. That was my conversation with King Yosef. The song you just heard was Dredge, and that's off of the latest EP, Mist of Pain. Dredge, available now everywhere. Seek it out, absorb it, listen to it, consume it, do whatever you got to do to take it all in. Suppository, if that works for you. The choice is yours. I want to thank Yosef for his time, for his conversation, for his friendliness. I want to thank you for listening this far along. I always very much appreciate that. And typically, I have a bunch here to cram in at the end and tell you things that you might not want to hear. But today, I'm not feeling like I have those things. I'll remember later and be like, damn it, I forgot to mention that. But as I peer at my notes, I don't see nothing. So let's just give you the reminder to rate and review the podcast on whatever listening app you're using. And to consider joining the Patreon. You could have heard this episode early and it would have only cost you $2 a month. It's a deal. It's a steal. How can you resist? I don't know, but you do it. This may be the only new episode for this week. I'm busy mourning the inevitable loss of my Philadelphia 76ers in the first round of the New York Knicks. There is very little room for optimism. And I'll try to keep it. But come on, guys, we know what's going to happen. This week, there's a lot of good new music. That's something to look forward to. One of the big ones, at least one that I'm very excited about, is a new Fool of Hell record. It's called Coagulated Bliss. It's coming out in Closed Casket Activities. And I've played a track from it on an earlier episode, but now I'm going to play you another one. This one is that title track, Coagulated Bliss from Fool of Hell. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.